Number one, having a vision, having a really big, you know, hairy, audacious goal, as Gino Wickman talks about in the book Traction. And then it's narrowing it down and going, okay, if that's my big vision, what does that look like 3 years from now? And then you get a bit of a three-year picture and you go, okay, what do I need to do this year in order to be on track to do what I'd like to do 3 years from now? And then you look at the year and you go, awesome, now I've got four quarters. Or some people break this up even further into like 6 week sprint cycles. And you just break it all down. That's kind of the framework for going, okay, how do we measure success along the way? Because a lot of people have these lofty goals and they don't break it down to go, what is the thing that I need to do this week or in the next 2 weeks to be moving myself towards success?
My name is Adam Shaw, and this is The Restorationist. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show where we are obsessed with helping you increase capacity and become a better leader. And the voice that you just heard in the intro is my new friend, Jake Nicole. I'm going to let you know a bit about him in a second. He's got some incredible insight for us today. But I just wanted to say thank you before we jump into the interview. I want to say thank you to all of you listeners for your support. And I've been traveling over the past 5-6 weeks. I think I've spent more time away from home than at home, or at least equal. And everywhere I've been, I have been meeting podcast listeners. And one of the things that's been in every conversation is that you are increasing capacity. And whether you're involved in business, church leadership, whether you are a baby boomer, Gen X or millennial or Gen Zer, it's this consistent theme that everybody is doing their best to increase capacity. And I just wanted to let you know that I'm so proud of you, and I'm so proud of you for how you're supporting and promoting this show. And I don't do any advertisements, but we are still in the top 0.5% of all podcasts on the internet. And despite my life being so chaotic, I've only been posting one episode a month. We are still charting in countries all over the world. And one of the most incredible things is that this podcast is charting in countries where there is not a large Christian presence. And so Jesus is being glorified, whether we're talking about church, preaching, leadership, business, personal growth, personal health, mental health. Jesus is being glorified in places where his name is not largely represented in the culture. And so I just wanted to say that this was so great. Keep praying for us. Keep praying for the show. Well, today, as I've said, I got my new friend Jake Nicole on the show. He's an incredible leader in the business world. And he actually represents our first business, enterprise, entrepreneurial, you know, style leader that we've had on the show. And I want to let you know a little bit about him. In the first half year of his real estate career, Jake Nicole sold an astonishing 30 million. That's right. I didn't stumble over my words. I didn't stutter. My guy sold $30 million worth of real estate. Now, he's a humble guy, but I want to let you know, we had to drag it out of him partway through the interview. He's going to sell $50 million this year. He has continued his rapid growth since becoming a top agent in the Greater Toronto Area and reaching the coveted icon status with his brokerage, eXp Realty. Jake's professional background in marketing and sales puts his team on the cutting edge of home sales, using the latest digital marketing strategies to reach a global audience. And I also should note that he is a content creator as well, where he wants to help other real estate agents and other business people grow and increase their capacity. And so I have put Jake's Instagram and YouTube account in the show notes, as well as his top recommended books, because Jake's not just in it for himself. He wants to help you grow at the same time. And when he isn't selling real estate and creating content, he is spending time with the most important people in his life, his wife, wonderful Helen, and his son, Harvey. And today, I'm telling you, if you're a pastor that's trying to grow a church, if you are a nonprofit leader that's trying to grow your organization, or you're like so many that are listening on this show, you go to work every day and you want to do well and be fruitful and be a good steward of your career, get a notepad and a pen out, because Jake is going to deliver some incredible practical content that's going to help you increase capacity. So, without any further ado, let's jump into our conversation with Jake Nicole. Well, Jake, thank you so much for being on The Restorationist today. We're so honored to have you as a guest. I guess let's just jump right into the conversation. And for those that don't know you, haven't run across your YouTube channels or your social media accounts, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
This has been such a fun, not only is this a fun opportunity, it's been such a fun journey in entrepreneurship getting to the point that I'm at today, which is a real estate agent who's kind of in some ways a failed entrepreneur and borrowing everything I've learned from entrepreneurship, taking it over to real estate, having a bunch of success. So 32 years old today, happily married to my wife, who I lovingly refer to as Wonderful Helen, which I absolutely stole from Bob Goff for all those listening with Sweet Maria. And we've got a son, Harvey, who's 4 months old in like 4 or 5 days, which is incredible. And I feel incredibly blessed, man. So I'm happy to be here today.
So tell us about that entrepreneurship journey. How did you, you know, what's the story of Jake getting into business? What's it look like for you?
It's a really fun one. And I say failed entrepreneur because in my early 20s, I had met a mentor. And at the time I was actually traveling as a musician. I was a touring drummer, playing on albums, doing all that fun stuff, and really trying to figure out how I took the musical journey to the next level, which was probably something like moving to a major city like Nashville or Los Angeles. And I sat down with a mentor and I said, hey, I'm thinking about probably moving to Nashville. I feel like that's the place to move to. And he said, and he had a band, a big band. And he said, you know what? It's actually an awful idea because you're going to move there. You're going to be a hired gun. You're going to be struggling to make a living. It's going to be a very tough gig. And he said, I've got this idea for an online drum lesson website. And at the time, I was already subscribed to some of these services. It wasn't a very novel idea. And it was like Netflix for drummers type idea, which is let's film a whole bunch of lessons, sell that as a subscription. And what happened is he said, what if I paid you like a couple thousand dollars to write a curriculum and come back and we could discuss it? And I went home that night and I thought, I'm going to do something better. I'm going to write a business plan and come back to this guy and go, here's our business idea. So I showed up a week later, sat down with him and I went, hey man, here's the business we're going to launch. And caught him a little bit off guard. And we just sat together week after week. And that was my very first, very entrepreneurial business, which is, like I mentioned, Netflix for drummers. So we brought in everybody from Stevie Wonder's drummer to Drake's drummer to Carrie Underwood's drummer to Jason Aldean's drummer, like all these mega drummers.
Very cool.
And we filmed about 500 drum lessons. So that was my foray into entrepreneurship and it got me to where I am today.
That's really, now let's fast forward, you know, to today. You recently launched, if my memory serves me correctly, it's pretty new or somewhat new. You haven't been doing this for 15 years. Jake Nicole Group, and have had enormous success. And I want you to tell us about your journey in Jake Nicole Group. And I want you to tell us some of the success that you've had. Cause I know for like year one, year two, launching your own kind of real estate company, you've really knocked it out of the park. So tell us about that. Don't worry about, you're not going to come across as boastful or anything like that. Don't hold back. We want to celebrate your success with you.
Awesome. Well, carrying on from that progression of 180 drums, the progression was essentially me falling in love with marketing and sales and learning a lot about that. So I had a friend going back about 2.5 years ago now who I saw crushing it in real estate. And I realized, Adam, with all these businesses I was building, I had this idea of one day having an exit. And a lot of entrepreneurs, if you don't relate to this, you should relate to this because it's the whole idea of building something that's sellable, like John Warlow would talk about in his book, Built to Sell. So I was trying to build a sellable business. And what happened was I had this real estate buddy who was making $1 million a year selling real estate. And I thought, wow, he's not doing anything that's that profound or that special or that unique. And if I could go out and even make $500,000 a year for the next 5 years, that might be more secure and predictable than this big idea of an exit. So that was the inspiration for me to go, you know what, real estate's a very predictable thing. I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I don't have to figure out product market fit. Like I don't have to create a minimum viable product. I can just go out and sell billions of dollars worth of inventory, which is all the houses that are on the market. So 2 years ago, I got into real estate. My very first year in real estate, I sold $750,000 worth of real estate for me personally as income. So that translates to something like $30 million in sales volume. And you can actually type in my name and type in EXP Realty and see that my first year at EXP, which was about 3 months after I got started. I started with a different brokerage, switched over to another one. And with EXP, my first year, I was top 50 individual sales producer. So I was like number 20 or something for top producers. So that's the journey.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thanks so much. And then this year, we're on track to do a little bit closer to $1 million. So it's been a ton of fun. We're a pretty small team. I've got an administrator who's slash operations person. We've just started bringing on agents as of the last couple of months. So it's been a blast.
That's incredible. And this is, that's tremendous growth to be able to scale this so quickly. What have been some of the keys to that? Just in my limited interaction that we've had, conversations we've had on the phone and stuff like that, you seem like a very intentional person. And so what are some of the principles or keys that you've extracted from the growth you've experienced? And you said, you want to know what it was doing this or thinking it was about thinking or solving problems like this, that has been, you know, it's been the thing that's opened the door for me. What have been your keys to growth?
The best part about real estate specifically, and then I'm going to translate this into, for all of you listening today, any business, whatever it is you're thinking about doing when it comes to growth, it all translates, which is there's a couple books that I studied for real estate really closely. One of them was a book called Millionaire Real Estate Agent, because it taught me a bunch of the principles I'll share a little bit about in a second. And then the second book was Traction, and Traction's by Gino Wickman. It is a business book that applies to anything you're looking to grow. It breaks down the pillars of what are the essential things you need to have in a business to predictably create success. So those two books would be highly recommended. Something even more industry specific is a book called Exactly What to Say for Real Estate Agents. And that author has written a whole series of books about the idea of exactly what to say, which is applicable across any industry. So those would be my three book recommendations. And the reason I reference those right away is because I realized with real estate, I didn't have to reinvent anything. I think I mentioned that earlier. I could just predictably go out and build a business. So here's how I predictably came across success and a little bit of an overnight success story after years of grinding it out as an entrepreneur. Number one, you have to have a really clear vision. You got to go, we know where it is that we're trying to get to, and we're painting that picture. And that's exciting for team members to get on board with, to get involved with, even for your clients to get on board with. And most importantly, for you to wake up every day and have a North Star. You know, it talks about this, Adam, in scripture. It's like, where there's no vision, the people perish. Absolutely. That's true in everything. It's true in business too. So number one, having a vision, having a really big, you know, hairy, audacious goal, as Gino Wickman talks about in the book Traction. And then it's narrowing it down and going, okay, if that's my big vision, what does that look like 3 years from now? And then you get a bit of a three-year picture and you go, okay, what do I need to do this year in order to be on track to do what I'd like to do 3 years from now? And then you look at the year and you go, awesome. Now I've got four quarters, or some people break this up even further into like 6 week sprint cycles, and you just break it all down. That's kind of the framework for going, okay, how do we measure success along the way? Because a lot of people have these lofty goals and they don't break it down to go, what is the thing that I need to do this week or in the next 2 weeks to be moving myself towards success? Like, there's this amazing interview with Bezos, who's being interviewed at some kind of summit. And the interviewer asked him, how do you feel when people come up to you and say, like, congratulations about your success last quarter? And he said, the irony is the success of last quarter was actually things that we did like 3 years ago. And now we're reaping the rewards of it. So I think number one principle is understanding you got to have a vision, then you got to break it down to know that the things you're doing today are going to take 60, 90, 180 days for you to even start to see the results of. And then I would say the other biggest piece, so there's all the vision, there's all the measuring. The other biggest piece for success is knowing what your goals or KPIs need to actually look like. And that was a really big thing that first book I mentioned, Millionaire Real Estate, taught me, which is, what are the KPIs? Like, how many people do I need to be touching every week? How many listing appointments do I need to be going on if I want to predictably have success? So for everybody listening, know your KPIs, have that vision, and then have something really crystal clear that you're trying to work toward.
Something you said before we go to the next question just kind of jumped out at me. And that was the idea of with goals, with vision, that you're working towards something, you know, to use, you know, scripture language that many of our church leaders would understand, is you're putting seeds in the ground for something you're not going to see, results or fruit from for a period of weeks or even longer. Like it could be a quarter of a year or half of a year. Could you just kind of talk about for a moment the mental resilience? Because we live in such a culture of immediacy. And so one of the things I do is I travel around and I talk to leaders because I'm a pastor. I talk to a lot of church leaders. And one of the things that I deal with when I'm dealing with Gen Z and millennial leaders that are just kind of coming into, you know, their calling or who they're supposed to be or what they want out of life is there is such a desire for immediacy, immediate results, immediate gratification that I've watched people short circuit tremendous opportunity because they did not have the discipline to kind of like grind it out for a little bit. Can you talk about like, you know, you're launching a real estate company. You've made it sound enormously easy. But because you said, hey, I didn't have to reinvent the wheel. People need houses. They need someone to sell them a house or sell their house. But there had to be a lot of grind associated at the beginning where you were like, I'm putting my neck out here and, I will know in 6 months if this is going to work out or not. Can you talk about the importance of that? I know I just kind of dropped this question on you, but can you kind of speak to that for a second?
Awesome question. So the question's essentially, how do you keep your head in the game when you know that there's a season of sowing and you're waiting for the reaping and you're waiting for the harvest?
Exactly.
And I would say the answer to that, to keeping your head in the game, is you have to be excited about what you're doing. I wish there was a silver bullet answer where you could say, you know, you wake up at 5 a.m., you journal for 15 minutes, you go exercise for 60 minutes, you come back, you like, there's all these little morning routine things. And I think that some of that is excuses, or there are ways for us to procrastinate on doing the work. And I would say that doing the work requires a certain level of you actually loving what you're doing and being passionate about it. So if you're trying to do something strictly for the end result or the benefit, and like to make this a little bit more material, because I feel like I'm speaking maybe in like parables with that. What I mean is this, is if my goal was just to make $1 million a year, real estate would be a very frustrating experience, because along the way to making $1 million, I have to service something like 60 clients a year. And of those 60 clients, there's 60 real estate agents that I'm interacting with who are representing buyers or sellers on the other side. There's just so many interactions, and it can be very frustrating. So I have to make sure that the work itself is something that I enjoy, not just the result. I guess the way that would translate is if you're trying to grow a church and it's purely about the growth of the church, and it's not about you being the best shepherd to those people that you can be, you're going to be pretty frustrated along the way. And this is something I've repeatedly had to learn. So even to this day, the way that I keep my head really strong is having that vision of where I'm trying to get to, knowing what I love about what I'm doing, and knowing that there's going to be tons of days where I don't love everything that I'm doing, but I love it because the process is leading me toward where I'm trying to get to. There's this amazing quote that a guy named John Mayer, is a very famous musician, said, and it's a great one, as he said, you know, there's times where I almost wish that I could cast the lure into the water and start all over again. Because he's like, I've caught the fish already. And I realized that I didn't really want the fish. I wanted to go fishing. I wanted the experience of actually being able to sit there. Like the funnest part of the journey was actually trying to reel in the big catch. And once you catch it, everything else kind of gets easier after that. And for him, it was this explanation of like, you got to love the process itself. Otherwise, you're going to catch the big thing and wonder why you were doing all this anyway. So the way I keep myself headstrong is to ultimately understand that I'm trying to get to somewhere important, which is, for me, I'm actually trying to eliminate this idea. Like you're talking about immediacy. One of the things that I think is very pervasive in our culture is the quick hits, right? We're trained to just want the dopamine of like, check social media. We just put up a new post. Let's see how much engagement we're getting. You put out a podcast episode. It's like, well, how many downloads did I just get? And chasing those immediate things are distractions from the larger thing that we're trying to do that ironically is actually the most fulfilling thing, which is, in your case, how do I build a show that's truly transformational? Even if I don't get those quick little hits along the way, how do I build something that's really, truly valuable long-term for the listeners? And that will solve everything else. I don't need to have millions of downloads right away. It's like, I really need to build something valuable. So for us in real estate, I hit the ground really hard going, my mindset was, I'm going to just do a ton of volume right away and get the gears going and spend a lot of money on advertising, learn how the business works. Today, I'm actually trying to scale backward a little bit, which is going, how do I make sure that every single client that comes into my business is like the last client I might ever have? How do I make sure that the experience for them is so incredible? How do I make sure that the listener of the podcast gets so much value that if it was the last episode they were going to hear, they would share it with friends? And if I couldn't spend another dollar on marketing, how would I turn that person into a raving fan? And I'm realizing that to use kind of the Seth Godin idea of not doing unscalable things in the beginning, it'll actually create that like huge referral network of people that are raving fans. So my mindset has shifted from don't chase the immediate stuff of like those fast, quick sugar-like returns where your brain just gets everything it wants. Do something that you know is going to be meaningful and pave the way to success. And maybe you need to do a little bit of both along the way. So today I'm running my real estate business. That is my fast cash business. It's a business where I can do a deal in 60, 90 days, I get paid and I get paid a pretty good amount of money, but I'm a dancing bear. I work really hard to get the deals done. It's a ton of work. And in the meantime, I'm building up the YouTube channel you mentioned, which is a very long-term 5-year plan. It's going to take 3 to 5 years to get it off the ground. And there's going to be no real immediate returns. I'm going to get hundreds of views on video. I'm going to spend hundreds of dollars to get very little, you know, views on every single video. But long term, it's going to compound. So I'm doing both at the same time. And that helps my mindset stay strong of like, this is all going to be super worthwhile.
So if I were to pull out kind of three things, and if I'm mistaken on any one of these, please let me know. So number one, you have to fall in love with the process. So the process of what you're doing. Number two, you have to be in love with your vision. You have to, that when the process is not so lovable, when it does become a grind, that you're so in love of with what you are creating or what you're trying to accomplish, that you're willing to endure the harder moments. And then the third thing that I hear that you've done is that you have built in things along the way where you're going to be able to get a win, and maybe a short win or a small win, but that desire to have some success, to have a win while you're playing this very long game, you've built that into the system so that it's going to give you that emotional fuel to keep going. Is that a good summary there? You've got fall in love with the process, fall in love with the vision, build in some small wins so you can go, hey, we knocked it out of the park today. We sold a house. We sold two homes. And then, okay, I'm going to get back in the YouTube studio and I'm going to start cranking out these principles on video so that I can help a whole bunch of other real estate agents do what I'm doing. Is that correct?
100%. The only thing I'd add to that is write all this down and have a weekly check-in with yourself. If you have a team, do it with your team where you sit down and you just go, are we on track? Are we doing the things we've committed to doing? Because we can also get pretty wrapped up in just doing so much of the work that we forget to like stop and pause and go, am I actually doing all the stuff that I'm saying I'm doing or supposed to be doing? So yes, everything you just said, and then write all that down.
Now I want to shift gears a little bit because I want to talk about pressure. One of the things, and I wrote this question down because this is a real personal one for me. And that is, I had built up in my mind, I've been involved in leadership, since I've been 19 years old. I started preaching when I was 16, and I've been involved in public leadership in some way. And I had this attitude since being involved in some sort of public leadership role, whether it was, you know, management at work and when I was bivocational, or it was organizational leadership within the church space, I had this attitude that pressure only comes from failure, and that once I become a success, or once I start accomplishing some of those goals or scaling to the growth that I want, then like, man, all that pressure is going to kind of melt away. And then I started hitting some of the targets that I wanted to hit. I started hitting some of the goals that I wanted. And I found that there is pain with success and there is pressure with success as much as I felt with some failure. In fact, the more I grew, the more the platform grew, it seemed like there was more pressure at times than when it was small and it was just, there wasn't anything happening. And so my question to you, Jake, is have you found this to be true? Has there been pressure with growth? And then how do you manage that leadership pain, to quote Samuel Chan? How do you manage that leadership pain as you grow and the pressure increases?
Not only are all these questions so good, but they're all so true in trying to get to the root of this trap of success, the journey to success, the journey through failure. I fully relate. I remember thinking, if I was making $200,000-$300,000 a year and using money as the measurement, in this case for a second, of success, that all my problems would go away. And then you realize, well, I'm making more money, also means that I'm spending more money, also means that I have more people relying on me. And then suddenly you're making $1 million, and then you have, you know, $300,000-$400,000 in overhead. And you're like, wow, this is all scarier than it ever was before. And it was actually easier when the cost to failing was so much lower. So here's how I would answer that question, is that the reason success is actually much harder in some respects than failing is it's going to hurt more if you fail again, and you're inevitably going to fail again. So that puts this weird pressure on your shoulder. What you probably felt, Adam, that I can relate to is once you start succeeding, there's a couple things that happen. Number one is you wonder, when and is this going to run out? So at what point am I going to transition into some kind of new role or opportunity? Am I going to fail my way into that new opportunity? How is this thing going to play out? Like, you think of someone winning a World Series. Next year, it's like the pressure's on to win that World Series again, or you feel the failure of it. For me, every year, it's like whatever I did last year, I feel like I got to do a little bit better this year, for fear of like, that was maybe my best years in the past. So that's a really scary thing with success. Also, once you've had success, you feel like you owe yourself less reasons to fail again. And that just mounts this pressure. You have all these different things that are going on in your head. Another thing that comes to mind is Ryan Holiday wrote a book called Ego is the Enemy. And
he's a great author.
Fantastic. Yeah. Super good. And one of the things that I've taken away from that is that once you start to have success under your belt, you can really quickly develop this ego. And the ego is totally the thing that's going to destroy you and challenge all of your success, because you got to keep in mind this idea of success is rented and the rent is due every day, and you got to keep working toward it. So just because you've had some kind of measurable success, whether that's influence, whether it's money, like, you got to define the terms of success and then ask yourself, this thing that I've now succeeded in order for you to keep growing, you have to keep failing. So I know I'm bouncing around a bit, Adam. You're just asking such good questions that I feel like I have to process it as we go. So a really useful mindset that I've learned about is this thing called the frame of the veteran. And it's this idea that, let's say I was driving my car to work this morning, and on the way to work, I got caught in traffic. All right. A lot of us get pretty frustrated when we get caught in traffic. And I think what compounds the frustration of traffic is that sometimes we end up in traffic when we weren't expecting it. And that's the most frustrating, because we're probably in a rush. We weren't expecting it or anticipating it. So it's delayed our day. And what I would say is the fastest way for you to lose the frustration that comes with ending up in traffic is the frame of the veteran, which is the frame of, if you just knew that every time you got in your car and started driving, there was traffic, it wouldn't bother you anymore. Like, if every single time you got in the car, it was just part of the process of being in the car was traffic, it wouldn't have the same negative influence on you, because you would just be like, this is what it is. I can't be frustrated by it, because it is what happens every time I drive the car. And I think for all of us with business, entrepreneurship, leadership, church, this idea of like trying to be a leader to people, we can start to believe with success that failure should no longer be a part of that journey, or that it's not as allowed, or that I shouldn't feel as frustrated as I once did. And those expectations versus reality create that frustration gap. And what we'd be better off to do is just go, now that I'm a leader, it should actually be harder. Now that I'm more successful, I should anticipate that the weight on my shoulders is actually going to be greater. And if you go in expecting that, you'll thrive, because you've eliminated the surprise of, I thought this was going to make everything easier. I'm making more money. I have more influence. I have more opportunities to speak, to be someone that is sought after, and you realize, actually, this is going to make everything harder. It's going to make the weight expectation feel greater. And if you have that frame of the veteran of like, this is just going to get harder, then suddenly it's not going to be as hard because you're going to be anticipating it.
I think that's so good. It reminds me, you know, my pastor brain kicked in for a second. I was teaching a Bible study the other day, and we're talking about the parable of the talents in the book of Matthew. And, so there's this investment from the master on the servant. And there was the one servant that went and hid his investment from his master in the ground because he was afraid of the pressure. And then there was the one that did not, and he turned his 5 into 10. And one of the things that struck me, I'm teaching the Bible study, and it was really relevant to me. It wasn't necessarily relevant to the person I was teaching, but the final statement of the master to the wise servants that did something with their investment was he said, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of the Lord, which is great, fantastic. Everybody wants that. And he says, you have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. And then the thought just, it just hit my heart halfway through the teaching. And it was the reward of being a wise steward was more responsibility. And the reward, right? Like that's what the reward from the master was. It was more responsibility. It was more investment. It was greater influence and it was greater power. It was not easy street. And so knowing that going in, that the reward of good stewardship, good leadership, and faithfulness is greater responsibility. You have that going. It's exactly what you said. It removes the psychological pain of, oh man, I thought it was going to be just like, I was going to lie in a hammock. Everything was going to be great. People would be serving me. And he goes, no, if you're a leader that's successful, you end up, the reward of that is you serve more people and that you lead more people and you have more employees that are depending on you. I just think that was such a great point, Jake. Before I derail and chase a rabbit, let me go to the next question. And we talk a lot about increasing capacity on the show. In fact, it's become the driving force of the show. We started out not with that as our primary vision, but then we had an episode called How to Increase Capacity that it just mushroomed. And it came at a point of real kind of leadership pain in my own life. And as a result, it's become the theme of this show. And so with the growth you're experiencing in your business and with the added pressure of scaling a company, how do you stay sharp? How do you keep growing? Because for you to grow Jake Nicole Realty Group and all of the YouTube channel and everything else that you're doing, you've got to grow as well as the organization is growing. Otherwise, you'll get stuck and everything else will stall. So what do you do? How do you stay sharp? How do you keep growing?
Awesome. Man, do I ever wish this wasn't true? This is me being very selfish for a minute. I wish it wasn't true that when John Maxwell says everything rises and falls on leadership, I believe that's a Maxwell quote. It's probably it couldn't be more true. And I wish that wasn't true because here's what I'm realizing in my life, Adam, and this will make everybody chuckle, I'm sure. I used to believe that was only true for business. Everything rises and falls on leadership. And then I got married. And then I realized that there was things that I just wanted my spouse to get or do or understand. And then I realized I'm actually like the leader here. I got to be the one to instigate this habit or thing that I want to see in my marriage. And I used to just believe this is just going to work out. They're going to figure it out. They don't really need me to come in and be a leader in it. And when you start to realize everything rises and falls on leadership, then the question becomes, well, how do I increase my capacity? Like, how do I be a better leader? How do I do these things? Because there's times, Adam, where I just wish I didn't have to be selling people all the time. And here's what I mean by that. Leadership is sales. Leadership is you being able to say to somebody, here is where we're going. This is why it's important. This is why I'm the right person to lead you there. This is why you're qualified and called to be in the role that you're in. And this is the time frame we need to get it done by. it's like, that's leadership. Whether you're coaching somebody through a difficult season of their life, you need to sell them on why they should behave the way that you think might be the best way. And as we know, as coaches, like, Jesus asked more questions than he offered answers. So we know that good coaching and good sales is actually a great question framework. But when I say sales, what I'm really talking about is, in order to increase my capacity, I have to be a great communicator and a great salesperson. And to me, that means not only do I have to have a clear vision of where it is that I'm trying to get to, but then the gap of where I need to get to and the person that I am today is the thing that I need to solve for. So for me, capacity is actually really simple. When I stop reading books, life is less enjoyable. And what I mean by that is that I've referenced several books while we've been sitting here. I referenced John Maxwell, Ryan Holiday. I've referenced these different authors, because books are like this condensed knowledge into 100, 200, 300, 400 pages of something that can save you weeks, if not years, of pain, trial, error. And you can just forfeit all that for the sake of just reading and absorbing information. The way that I increase capacity today is, number one, having books that come highly vetted to help me through that season of that thing that I'm trying to do. The hardest things I've ever done in my life, Adam, were the things where I thought I was just going to figure it out myself. So don't try and increase capacity by thinking you're just going to stumble upon the answers yourself by like roughing through it. Find people that are vetted, that have spoken about it and taught about it. The other way that I increase capacity is by having balance in life. I oscillate between this idea of balance being a bad idea as an entrepreneur, because I'm like, everything's kind of crazy and chaotic and everything's held in tension. And I think what I realize, the more and more I'm, you know, increasing my income with business and taking on more responsibility, is I'm really realizing this idea of, you actually do want to have a life that's held really well in balance, because it gives you the capacity to endure and keep going and push hard. So that means having like time set aside for your spouse that are your date nights. That increases your capacity because it renews your spirit and gives you strength and deepens your marriage with the person that is like your confidant, your, you know, number one cheerleader slash your running mate. And then the other thing is having time for your physical health. Like, when I stop going to the gym, my mind doesn't feel as sharp. I feel kind of like foggy and there's just like a lot going on. And as soon as I get back into the gym, I feel the sense of like a renewed spirit where I'm like, okay, man, my body feels strong. I feel like I have the capacity to tackle more stuff. The same is true with scripture. As soon as that falls out of a routine in my life, it's like my aimlessness or the lies that perpetuate us from the world start to be pulled into our ideology. And it's like, you need to question all that. So the answer for capacity is really a question of, how do you create longevity in what you're trying to do? Because in order for you to have capacity, you might be doing something that requires you to sprint for a season, and you just need capacity to sprint and then run like crazy, and then you're going to take a sabbatical afterward. But it's highly likely that whatever you're trying to do to have a lasting impact is going to require an element of endurance. And for that, the capacity for endurance means you're going to build systems and structure in your life to create ebbs and flows of like, I work really hard and I rest. I do this all out and then I have balance. So that's how I'd say I increase capacity, in a structure within my life. And then the other thing is like, have your hands on books, go pick up books, listen to podcasts. I think books just hit a little bit harder for me, but podcasts, audiobooks, anything you can do to, while you're at the gym, get that information into your soul and your mind, and that'll help you increase capacity.
That's so good. I know my tendency, my personality is to drive yeah, hard until like you collapse, and then you like, you scrape yourself back up, and I have learned that is unsustainable, and it actually can lead you to create a leadership environment where you are leading from. You're leading from the worst elements of your personality, and you're not leading from your gifts. You're not leading. Yep. You're not leading from the overflow of what's healthy and what's good in you. And so, pulling back and having better balance, having better rhythm in your life, is actually the key to creating ongoing growth. I would. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just gonna say, and I'm the same way. My challenge is that I'm a driver, I'm a pusher, I'm a let's work for 17 hours today and get this done. And I think what I have failed through and what I continue to learn, and maybe you'll ask me in a year and I'll change my answer, but as of today, the thing that I've realized is if I can't create sustainability, then I'm trying to sprint through the season, hoping that I'm going to be able to coast a little bit on the next one. And I think the whole 5 steps forward, 4 steps backward is a lot less productive than 3 steps forward, 1 step back, 3 steps forward, 1 step back. It's trying to have that consistency where I don't have to do 5 steps, 4 steps back and do that for a season until I burn out. And then I got to pick it back up and rebuild it.
And I think of, and I'll go to the next question in a moment, but I was thinking like, if you don't have balance in your life for your family, for your relationships, ultimately, what is the success for? If it's just for you, if it's just for me, it ultimately becomes this an exercise in narcissism. Whereas so balance actually becomes part of a cycle to success. Number one, you're creating success, and that gives you time to be present with the most important relationships in your life. But also by being present with the most relationships in your life, you get this relationship fuel. You have the spiritual, emotional, physical health to continue to push forward. And so eventually a well-balanced leader, if they set their life up right, is feeding their success is feeding their most important relationships. They're a blessing to their family. They're a blessing to everyone else that's around them. But by taking time for those important people, time for God, time for your mental and emotional and physical health, you're creating this incredible springboard that creates momentum. Because there's nothing worse than going to work when your marriage sucks, or nothing worse than 100%. Trying to like in lead in organizational leadership, church or otherwise, when all of your relationships are absolutely falling apart. It requires a level of emotional compartmentalization that is just not healthy and leads itself up to failure down the road. But if you work hard, create success, then you have something with which to bless your family. Your family can be proud of you. It strengthens your relationships. And then by being present with them, you actually become better at work. And so I think that was a tremendous point that you said. A lot of leaders, they talk about reading books, having great resources in, but I think this life rhythm component that you just mentioned, it's huge, especially if you're a driver.
And just before we move on from this, I would say a book that is a great reference point for this is a book called The One Thing by Gary Keller. And the book teaches you, I think, the idea of priorities as well, which is really important, because maybe the objection for the listener today is like, well, Jake and Adam, like, I have a million things I have to do. I love this idea of having some kind of rhythm and balance, but I'm in a season of building. I'm in a season of this, and we can create these very real scenarios in which this idea doesn't maybe feel, it feels maybe more romantic than it is real. And what I would say is probably happening in your life as well is that you're caught up in like with the 7 habits of highly effective people, you're caught up in like the lower quadrants where it's like unproductive, unimportant work. You're letting the fires that should be burning be all consuming for your priorities. So go read a book called The One Thing. And it has this question, Adam, that's actually written on the back of the book. That's like a phenomenal question, which is, what's the one thing I need to do this hour, today, this week, this month, that makes everything else easier or unnecessary? And that is a question that creates leverage in your life. And ultimately, what I'm talking about is finding a rhythm and a balance, because you're able to do a good job of asking yourself, what's the most important thing I need to be doing right now? Because if I'm being honest, there are about 400 things that I could do today. Everything from like rewriting emails that are automatic to our list, to like getting back to that client, to that new lead, to like, there's just unending numbers of things that I could put in my to-do list. But what I need to get really good at, and all of us who are striving towards more capacity, a better version of leadership, becoming the best version of who God has called us to be, is understanding that we are limited by this crazy thing called time. And with the time that we have to ask ourselves that focusing question of, how do we create more leverage? What's the one thing I need to do that makes everything else easier or unnecessary? And that is, in essence, the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, or even a variation of the Matthew principle that we talked about earlier, right? Which is this idea of like, to him who has much, much is given, and to him who has little, even what he has is taken away from him. We see this idea And, you know, I could be misquoting that scripture, but I think in essence, what it's really saying is that when you increase your capacity, there's even more that you'll be able to be stretched to be able to accomplish because you're on the road of increasing capacity. And the same is true is that when you start to blame everything in the world around you as the thing that's holding you back and you absorb this mentality of like, I am ultimately a victim in some ways in life, then it's like you're going to shrivel up your capacity because you're no longer the one who's in charge of anything. You have a reason and excuse and everything else to blame. So I know we stuck here for a while, but I think probably the biggest thing we could get out is in order to have a good rhythm in life and a flow of how you're trying to tackle all these big audacious goals that you have as you're listening, like I do, you have to ask yourself, how do you prioritize better to give yourself the freedom to make sure that you prioritize your downtime?
Let's talk about scaling organizations, because you've had to scale your company quite quickly. Yep. And I guess this is just a big open-ended question, and then we'll kind of funnel it down to specifics. But what can you tell us about scaling a business, scaling an organization? Because you're quite modest at the beginning, because you and I both have a great friend that helped set up this show, is a part of your company, part of my church. Shout out to Sebastian for creating this conversation. But you've sold millions of dollars in year one, and you're on track to do even more this year in gross sales. What have you learned about scaling a business or scaling an organization?
Thanks for the kind words. And yes, we love Sebastian here. So yeah, this year we're on track to sell about $50 million worth of real estate, and we've sold close to 40 already, and we're in Q4. So to answer that question of scaling and how I think about scaling, man, I could talk about this forever. So here's how we'll try and summarize this.
We'll buckle up. We're ready.
Yeah, let's go. So EOS, the entrepreneurial operating system that comes out of the book Traction, is the best way for you to think about laying the framework and the groundwork for what do I have to do to build my organization to a certain size? And out of that, you'll start to come across principles like, what are the foundational things we need to do in our business? So understanding how we run our marketing, how we run our operations, how we run finance, how we set aside dollars within finance to go put them back into marketing, having a framework for how you use money and resources and other resources, the talent on your team. How do you optimize that? How do you optimize your own time? How do you optimize joint venture partnerships and like all these different things that you can look at to go, how do we make this living, breathing thing that's a business grow faster and grow bigger? And what I would say to that is that for me, I have a good operational background where I like to build systems and processes within a business. And those are the foundation of a business. So trying to scale a business is a lot like trying to build a skyscraper. When you build a skyscraper, and I don't know the exact information on this, but it's something like the weight of this big. So when they build like these giant towers that we've seen in New York City, you know, the ones I'm talking about, Adam, that are like the enormous, these mega skyscrapers that they're building now, and they have a name, I can't remember what it is. They actually put this giant rod into the ground that's like the same height or something as the building itself. It's like this insanely deep pole and rod that is I can't remember the name of it, but it's the foundation, so to speak, of this building to make sure that when the building is swaying, its anchor is deep, deep, deep into the ground to make sure that it's really strong and it's not going to go anywhere. And in your business, that is your systems. That's your processes. That's understanding that when something needs to be done, it's done a certain way, because you're going to build everything on top of your systems and your procedures. So I'll give a tangible example within real estate. There's a couple buckets when I think about scaling. Number one, there's acquiring clients. And for a lot of real estate agents, they acquire clients through their sphere, through people they know at church, through friends, family members, friends of friends, and that's how they grow. And then there's all the other colder strategies, like I'm going to run pay-per-click advertising. I'm going to run various forms of paid advertising. I'm going to use guerrilla marketing, like knocking on doors, hosting open houses. So number one is I get really clear about what does client acquisition look like for me. And then once I've acquired a client, the next system that I need to build is, what does the onboarding experience look like? And then once I've acquired a client and I've helped them buy something, what does the transaction experience look like for them all the way to closing? So from, you know, contract to close, what does that deal look like? Then how do I nurture past clients? And that's the whole business. So once you identify all the core areas within your business, scaling is about going, how do I fill more people at the top of the business? How do I just get way more people to come into the front end of the business? But if all these other areas that we've talked about, from how I nurture them through the deal, actually close the deal, and then nurture them long term, if I don't focus on these other three areas, I'm going to be creating a leaky bucket problem, which is where I pour more people into the top and I've got this huge hole in the bottom of my bucket and they all just fall out the other end. Not in a good way. We're not getting the repeat business from them. So what we really want to do is increasing our capacities, increasing the size of the bucket, so that as we scale with adding more people, our bucket is able to support them. It has a nurturing environment for them where they grow, where they flourish, where in my world, the transaction goes well. Because if I nail these other pieces, when I get to the bottom, what happens is, and I'm nurturing past clients, a really healthy business looks like every client feels like they're the top priority and the business is designed for them. A really bad business would look like every client feels like they're a part of a machine and they're one of the cogs in my big machine that I'm trying to run. And the problem with that is, if I overwhelm myself with scale too early and I haven't built those systems, then what happens is people start to overflow and they're unhappy with the experience. It hurts my reputation. It damages me actually in what I'm trying to do, because I have all these clients coming in, I can't service them, they're unhappy. Now they're telling people and it's ruining my goodwill, and the opposite is true. So I'm answering your question by actually saying that I think the best thing you can do with scale is build a really broad foundation before you start to think about the number one thing we all want to talk about, which is like, how do we grow our churches? How do we get in front of more people? How do we get more speaking opportunities? Like, how do we just reach more people, reach more people? And what you really want to be asking is, if I reach someone, a new client, a new person comes, what is the systems and structure to make sure they're so well integrated that my retention of that person is incredible, and that person's ability to go out and become a raving fan is everything. So there is an article by a guy named Kevin Kelly, who's some tech guy, and he wrote this article called 1,000 True Fans. And it's the idea that if you just had 1,000 true fans with whatever you're trying to do, and those people were like raving fans of everything you're going to do, they're going to go tell all their friends, you would never have to get another customer. And that's a really powerful idea, because if we all built our businesses that way, we'd realize that scaling is actually about systems and structure to allow everyone that comes through our experience to become a raving fan. So is that helpful, man? Like, does that answer that question for you?
It is. I think across different environments, in essence, what you're saying is you need to figure out what are the foundational core components of your organization that basically reaches out and handles people, how you process people, how you treat people, how people feel when they're interacting. So instead of thinking about the explosive growth first, start with the systems and processes of how you will handle people that you can scale as those people begin to flow in, whether it is your real estate company, whether it is your organization. We've got other real estate investors in Nashville that listen to the show.
Awesome.
And they just started, they got a strong mission component of their business. There are other people that are involved in other forms of sales. And then of course we get a lot of church leaders as well. And I think that the principle is absolutely universal. I guess my follow-up to that is, and your answer is wonderful. My follow-up to it is, how do you determine what is an enduring key to your success that needs to be sustained from like what was something that was only for a season? So you talked about foundation, and there are some foundational principles. You know, you talked about those four things for real estate, but how those four things for real estate, you know, the client experience at the transaction, et cetera, how you go about doing that may evolve as the organization grows. So as a leader, how do you determine what's a principle that lives forever? What's something that, like, you know, it's from my cold, dead hands? Or, you know what, this got us to here, but it's not going to get us to there. And so we're going to keep the principle, but we're going to chuck the method.
Super cool.
Yeah. How do you do that? How do you figure that out?
Yeah, it's awesome. So what I've been thinking about a lot is that there are a lot of, and I can't think of a better way to say this, there's a lot of just unsexy things that you just have to do all the time, right? And the reason I use that phrase is it's not fun. No one wants to do it. It doesn't light us up. It's not the thing that gives us energy. And you just have to keep using it as a method. I think that as entrepreneurs, for those of us listening, I'll speak for myself. There is this shiny object syndrome that we all face, and we all want and get excited. I get excited about this new method I'm going to implement, this new system I'm going to bring to the business, this new talent that I'm going to bring in. And I keep thinking that there's this some new thing out there that's going to solve a lot of my problems. And the truth is, for me, the way I often think about business is I just need to make this business 1 to 5% better. And it's easier earlier on when you're first starting a business because you can make it 20, 30, 50% better pretty quickly because you're building something from scratch. But as your business, your organization gets larger, you're really just trying to make incremental improvements all the time. So to answer your question of when do we decide to get rid of models, change models, remove systems, when do you do that? You do it when ultimately that model or system is no longer sustaining growth, or it is designed for a certain size of your business and then it doesn't work. So maybe in real estate, you're doing something really unscalable. And this is where this question is interesting to me. Maybe you're doing something really unscalable, like you're writing a birthday card to every one of your clients, right? And now you're too big for that. So maybe you go to church and you used to handwrite, notes to people or whatever the case may be. And now you're too big for that. And what I would say is that at that point, if I am too big to have the time to sit down and write notes to my clients, I may be reaching a size where I need to start to think about empowering other people to have the same level of leadership within my organization. So for me, that would be, I need to bring on some more agents, because if I can't service people at the same standard that I once had, a lot of us are tempted to just go, well, let's change the standard. And I would argue that here's the risk of what would happen if I change that standard. If I go from a really high level of personal touch for people to like, well, I don't have the time for that anymore because I'm growing so fast. I've got so many opportunities. There's so many clients. The risk that I run into is maybe that handwritten card, out of every 10 people that I send it to, it generates a referral. And the value of that time for me to sit and write 10 cards is perceivably not as valuable as launching some new marketing campaign where I need to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to get a new client, or I could just sit and write 10 cards. And I think that the problem is because we don't measure where our business comes from, where our growth comes from, we'll throw out perfectly successful, awesome models to replace them with some new shiny model, when really it's like we actually maybe have to grow a little more horizontally, and we got to like add another agent or add another leader or add another pastor or add, like just create more support so that we can keep that same high level of touch. I think, Adam, with where my head's at today, I'm very much at the place of realizing that a lot of success is actually doing the really boring things really well, creating structures and systems around them and executing it and doing it for a really long time. And you'll be successful. Like there's businesses out there that are billion-dollar businesses where they like do roofing, and you would never think a roofing company would become a $1 billion company, but they just did the same thing for 3 decades, 4 decades. And it created this incredible result where they just got 1, 2, 3% better every quarter. And that compounds because as you get bigger, 1% gets bigger of improvement, right? So I would say that's a really important thing. And then just to touch on that last point too, of us talking about building systems, creating infrastructure. The other thing that's really tempting is it's tempting when we're chasing that shiny object, but what we forget is that as we get bigger, the shiny objects get more attractive and they get bigger. So to me, 4 or 5 years ago, a $10,000 a month opportunity would be really compelling. Now I'm looking at $50,000 to $100,000 a month opportunities that are compelling. And you have, as you grow, you have new opportunities that become the draw for you to get distracted and chase them. So just like everything else, the success trap as you get bigger is that the things that will try and pull your attention away don't look the same as they did when you were smaller. They also grow with you.
So what I'm hearing from this is, again, circling back to what we talked about at the beginning, the absolute essentiality of having clarity of vision and values to knowing, you know, when is it time to make a change on a method, or when is it time to provide more support to a method, because it's fundamentally a core of how we do. That's how I translate values. Values is like, how do we behave around here? How do we do things around here? And we won't chase the rabbit trail, but it was, you know, thinking about the idea of the shiny object syndrome. It is so attractive when we at times overemphasize the tools we use as opposed to understanding what they are. And that is, they're tools to connect us to people. Ultimately, what you're talking about in real estate, all leadership, all business, and even magnified ever more so in church work, is ultimately about relationships, about how you're treating people, about creating a consistency of environment so that you become predictable in the lives of people, and as a result, they can trust you. And so I think you gave a tremendous answer, and that is, you know, there are times when you need to evolve what you do or how you do it, but ultimately, you need to be tethered to your vision and your values so that you're not constantly chasing the next new shiny thing, because ultimately, it's people's connection to you and to your team and to your organization and the relationship and how that relationship feels. It's going to cause the growth that you're looking for, not, you know, something new you saw on Instagram yesterday. Am I summarizing that enough?
Yeah, you're perfectly summarizing it. And I think what I'm ultimately saying is, you can probably hear this pang for me and everything that I'm saying of trying to not miss the forest for the trees, which is trying to remember what business you're in. And it's easy to just chase like growth, scale, capacity, more. And those things are all good when they come from healthy places. And as soon as they come from dysfunctional places where you're trying to grow for the sake of growth, you're trying to expand for the sake of expansion. And it's like, well, we should be expanding because there is such a demand for our services of people that want to work with us and roll. Like, trying to make sure that growth is organic. We live in a world where growth is often steroid pumped beef, chicken, whatever, right? Or it's Apple, and it's money, it's venture capital money that's raised by these giant venture capital firms that inject huge amounts of money. And it's its own version of steroids, where it's like grow or die. And for really big businesses, right, Adam, at the end of the day, the investors like the Y Combinators, these different organizations that help grow these large businesses, they don't care if 10 of them fail. They just need one of them to be a unicorn. And that's great when we're talking about an Uber, or we're talking about an Airbnb, or we're talking about any of these other like sharing economy models or Facebook or whatever. But at the end of the day, when we're talking about something as fragile as like churches or like the mission of, like, for me, I don't want to just throw away clients to like be the model of like the big team brokerage that just churns through people to be as big as possible. Because I think what I'm realizing is there's really big risks in that like grow at all cost mentality. I used to believe this idea, expansion always and always. And what you start to realize is like, maybe actually the best thing I can do is think about some more sustainability and think about like, how do I create raving fans? And what happens is, I think it makes it more enjoyable for everybody, including me, because it's taken the weight off my shoulders. Like, just 6 months ago, Adam, if you had said, Jake, what's your ambitions with real estate? I'd be like, we're going to be the biggest team in Southern Ontario. We're going to do the most transactions. We're going to do the biggest, the most, the highest number, like vanity, vanity, vanity metric. And then what I realized is a lot of those teams aren't actually as profitable as you'd think. And then I was like, well, what's the point of this? Like, I don't need to have my face on every billboard. So then I started to reassess it and realize that actually the most profitable agents are the ones that are like very boutique, but there's no scale. And the risk in that is you're the dancing bear. So for me, I had to realize, well, then what business do I really want to be in? And how am I going to transition myself out of that business if I don't want to be that forever? So I guess for you, it's like, yeah, for us as an audience talking today and being in conversation even with the audience, it's like really ask yourself, where is it you're trying to get to? Where do you feel like maybe you need to grow at all costs? And where can you maybe think about scale a little more organically to give yourself sustainability and long-term vision?
And what I'm hearing from this, so we've talked about a lot about today in the various questions, the importance of having radical clarity of vision, importance of having values, process, structure, and what I'm hearing in the answer here is I'm hearing a lot of, you know, culture answers. What's the culture yeah. of our organization? What's the culture Huge. Of our team? How what's it going to look like when we go about and do our business? Who do we really want to? I mean, we got a vision, and all companies have visions. They want to grow. They want to be profitable. We've got some anchors in the ground of how we want to treat people. But then there's the intangible of an organization or a team or a business, and that's that culture vibe. And what's it gonna be like? I've traveled to a bunch of different countries, and you understand pretty quickly all countries have laws, they all got flags, they've all got military, police, border patrol, but the culture of a nation actually defines how all of those commonalities actually become extremely different from wherever your home is. And so that's what I'm hearing here, and that is the leaders, we got to figure out, it can't be growth at all costs. We've got to figure out how it is we're going to go about doing what we feel we're supposed to do, what we feel God's called us to do, so that we can create a sustainable culture. Am I misinterpreting it? Am I hearing you correct? Or
you're spot on. Even as we're having this combo, I'm trying to think about, where do you see exponential growth in scripture? Like, where are the times that you actually see that happen? And Acts comes to mind, obviously, yeah. where you see yeah. this explosion in the church. And it's, what is that growth? Heavily empowered by the Holy Spirit, like yep. guiding the formation of the church. But you also see within the incredible scale that's happening, highly unscalable things. Like, you see everybody pooling their money together and their resources yeah. together. You see things that are happening that if you remove those core things, we all want the growth without maybe some of those core things. And I think I'm trying to always ask myself, if I'm willing to scale, what are the other sacrifices I might have to make in order to grow and scale? And all of this would be lost if I didn't say that at the end of the day, you want to know that God's called you to scale, to do what you're doing, to grow, to have the standards, because you summarized everything today perfectly, which is, it does come down to the culture. And I would say for all of us, we are trying to be extensions of the culture of the kingdom of heaven. And as much as I want, you know, the Jake Nicole group to be my own culture, it really isn't. It's this extension of all these like biblical wise principles that are going to become the foundation for the culture we're building. And if any of those are at conflict with the principles and culture that God creates, then I'm probably on this like little path to destruction. And hopefully those other principles keep us straight and on straight and narrow, you know? So this is awesome.
I think that's a profound point, just to kind of put the end on that there. Because, you know, because there is a temptation to lose who you're supposed to be and who you are in the pursuit of bigger, better, more. And yes. as, you know, if I can, you know, I know we're predominantly talking about business and organizational life in general, but you've pivoted right hard to church leaders here for a moment, that there are certain non-negotiables that are values, that are principles of the kingdom of God, that are core beliefs, yeah. that to dissolve those values and principles may make us more palatable to the surrounding culture, but then you cease to be the church. You're not the church anymore. And it's the same, those principles, they jump over to business. And that is, Jake, fundamentally at its core, you want to be a disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ. You want to follow Jesus. And there are certain things that, yeah, if you start churning people and people no longer feel like they're valuable or intrigued, you lose the value of the kingdom of God, which is loving people as you love yourself. And so if you compromise that, you compromise who you are and what brought you to this moment. And so I think I think this has been such a great conversation because every leader I talk to wants bigger, better, more. We want to have more impact. We want to see, but there has to be something that's tethering us to truth that that restrains. It's not growth at all costs. It is.
Yes.
It is. That's the wrong approach. There has to be a tethering to values and to truth that restrains us so that we don't end up compromising who we are. And then we wake up and we've got this massive machine, but we don't know who we are anymore. And it no longer reflects the deepest held values that we hold dear. Am I making sense there?
You're perfectly accurate. And we see this in scripture when we see the temptation of Jesus in the desert. The promise is, hey, like, if you bow down to me, I will give you all of these things that seem to be important to. Like, when we hear that scripture, at least for myself, I'll speak plainly for myself. When I hear that scripture of like, hey, bow down to me, and I will give you everything, all the influence, all the money, all the praise, all the whatever.
Without
the cross. And the dilemma is that in that moment, Jesus has to go back to being hungry, being alone, being like everything that's the opposite of that. And this is definitely not a message of like, hey, don't have ambition, don't go after these things. Man, I'm gonna get off this call today and like look at a full calendar of all the stuff that I'm excited to tackle, and I'm gonna go hard. So it is not a don't go after stuff, but it is definitely a message of like, don't get lost in the things that you feel like are the priorities, when a lot of those things, you can have them all and realize like, this is not what success looks like. And the greatest promise was like, hey, bow down to me and I'll give you all this other stuff. So we just need to keep, to your point, we need to make sure that we're not sacrificing the cross to go after all these other things that are seemingly going to make us happy, make us fulfilled, make us feel like we're closer to God when we're not.
There's so much on this last point we could chat about for a long time. But Jake, I appreciate your time so much. I appreciate you coming on the show. I know we've got a lot of listeners that are going to want to get connected to you at the end of this conversation today. We've got some that are involved in real estate and investment corporations as well as just leaders in general, because everything you've said here can pour into any industry. Including the the vast majority of our audience, which is church workers. How can they get connected to you and your content? Tell us a little bit about how to do that.
Awesome. Best place to find me is just to go to Instagram, and I've got a YouTube channel, everything else, but we link it so often on Instagram that if you go to Instagram, you'll see everything else that we got going on. So it's just at Jake Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-L-E, at Jake Nicole on Instagram. You'll find me there. And, tons of different stuff. And for those of you listening today, thank you so much. Definitely reach out. Let me know how you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you and pass it along to Adam as well. And I would also say this, there's going to be some of you who are exponentially more successful than me and you're not impressed by anything. There will be other people who will be on a very similar trajectory. And there will be others of you that look up to me. And just know, if you follow me, like, I am not the perfect example. Nobody is. And I guess I just share that to just like humbly say that I am also on this journey of like, we had a lot of answers today where I gave the right answers, but I'm also still on this journey, Adam, of like figuring all this stuff out myself, figuring out what it means to live an ambitious and yet like a Christ-centered life. So thanks for having me on, man. I really appreciate what you're doing. And I really appreciate the impact you're having, not just in Sebastian's life, but like, I see how it is that you're trying to prioritize having an impact. And this show is just one small example of what you're doing, man. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you very much, Jake. You have a wonderful rest of your day, and God bless you.